This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to the latest bonus episode for October. Spooky season. Spoopy season. Don't know how the hell that became a thing, but it has. I'm Paul. I'm sans Wayne, because, hey, horror. And for this bonus episode, I've got a stalwart returning guest. I have no idea how many times this man has been on the show, but it's because he always brings some class, because he is a horror guy. Yes, I'm speaking about Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast. Gerald, welcome back to the countdown.
Paulie, what's up, man? Of course. Thanks for having me, brother. And for horror, for October?
Yeah.
Of course, man. Of course I'm here. But thanks for having me, brother.
We are just, well, I've just appeared on your show for a horror episode, so it was only fitting that I don't get much of a chance to talk about horror like we did it last week with Sean from the Story of Your and Yours podcast, which was great fun. But that's all Wayne will allow me through October, one horror episode. So this time, I thought, bugger it. Let's do a bonus episode. Yeah. Let's concentrate on what's happening this year in the year of shite that is 2020. Let's talk the five best horror films released, you know, basically this year, sort of after January 1st, as a bit of a guide to people, not just for Halloween, but through the rest of the year, what you might like to check out if you're a horror film fan. Now, Gerald, we had a discussion off mic. We have two different perspectives of 2020 horror releases.
I think so. Well, my eyes lit up when you texted me about a week ago about this, because I was like, oh man, that's a great fucking idea, because there are a lot of movies that I've really enjoyed this year that I feel like, because of COVID, are kind of under the radar. So, you know, obviously the theater going thing is really hurting right now.
Oh, yeah.
So you have your streaming services, you have, you know, channels like Shudder, which I absolutely adore, and they have a lot of great originals, and you have, you know, Amazon and Netflix and so on. So most of mine, I was looking at my list, and there's three movies on my list that I saw in the theater out of the 12 that I have listed overall. So a lot of them I saw at home and I saw on the couch, you know what I mean? But I am a fan of a lot of this stuff, so I was interested to hear you say that, because you were saying this was tough for you, right? To kind of get five together.
Well, look, I like all five of my films. I don't love any one of them to say this is the greatest film this year. Like the top two in particular, I think, have a lot of merit, which we'll get to, obviously. The 3, 4, 5 are, I enjoyed them all in their way, but they're not wonderful films. They're not the exemplar examples of their subgenres or the like. And then 6 through 10 after that, which we're just going to mention very quickly as honorable mentions at the end, a la your show's style. Yeah, they're all, okay. In a better year, they wouldn't be anywhere near a top 10 for me. So, yeah, as you say, or have implied, horror films make it to the cinema. Of course they do, especially if you're a Blumhouse product. But they're not often great horror films at the cinema. And normally the quality is what you find that sneaks its way onto things like Shudder. Now, Shudder has come to Australia. It hasn't come to Australia on the PS4, which is where I would instantaneously sign up for it. And you know, apparently there's some backdoor way you can get through Amazon Prime. I cannot for the life of me work out if you can do that in Australia or not. So
yeah, I don't know if you can in Australia. Obviously, I don't know because I'm in the States, but that's how I have my subscription, is through Amazon.
I would have no problem paying it, because, you know, I'd like to support that kind of network and you know, obviously sample some things I haven't seen before and catch up with things I have. But yeah, there's just no easy way to do it, given my TV doesn't have that as a direct app option either. So Shudder needs to improve its distribution game if we're ever going to get anywhere.
Well, either that or, you know what that means, man. You got to come over here, brother. Get a code, come over to the States, man. Just get Shudder.
What a great time.
Yeah, I know. Maybe wait till next year. Wait till next October. But yeah.
All right, then. Well, let's get into it then, Joe. One way or the other, let's talk about the best that we have seen thus far. What is your number fifth best horror film of 2020?
My number five is a sweet little indie film that I stumbled upon, and actually one of the ones I was mentioning that I got to see in the theater, so I was really excited about this. I was the only person in the theater for a matinee screening for this movie, and it's a really creepy kind of psychological horror, but it's a film called Come to Daddy.
Okay.
Starring Elijah Wood. Did you ever see this one?
I did. I'm just wondering why it's not in my... I'm wondering why it's not in my list of horror films, but I definitely watched it. Didn't love it as much as you, but go ahead.
Yeah, you know, and I guess we should have said it at the top, but I'm gonna make a point not to give away spoilers, just because
we'll stay clear.
These are obviously brand new films. But I mean, just a kind of a brief plot synopsis of this film. I mean, Elijah Wood is kind of this hipster dude who's been estranged from his father. And his father lives in a secluded oceanfront kind of mansion out in the middle of nowhere. And he, you know, receives a letter from his dad. And he hasn't seen him in like over a decade since he was a little boy. And his dad's like wanting to reconnect with him. So Elijah Wood goes there. And this guy, again, the dad is secluded. So it's kind of like he's the only person on a deserted island, basically. And it's just him and his son together. And we start to find out some things, you know, kind of become uncovered, and there's some plot twists involved, and, you know, perhaps the father is not what he seems to be. And it kind of just hijinks ensue, and it's a whole plot built in there, and it's kind of a home invasion film in a little bit, yep, a little bit of a way as well. But there's a lot of psychological stuff built into it, and I think there's a couple really good plot twists in the film. The first one comes about halfway through, and then the one at the very end as well that I really enjoyed. And I also love Elijah Wood's kind of endearing, kind of geeky hipster vibe that he puts off, because he's a perfect casting choice for this role, I thought. Mm-hmm. But this is just a really oddball movie that does have some scary moments, but it's just a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. So that's my number five, Come to Daddy.
Yeah, I think I actually found it to be much more of a thriller than a horror. Like, it's almost a thriller black comedy. There's a couple of gory moments, but there's not a lot of horror in the movie for me. But that said, again, this year, not picking on you for it, just saying that's probably why see it on my list.
Yeah, I could see that, man. I mean, it definitely toes the line. And it's one of those that, you know, one person might say horror and one person might say thriller, and neither one of them are wrong. So I get it 100%. But I don't know, maybe seeing the theater, because there's so few of those that we got to do this year.
It
did make me jump, and it did creep me out. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's it for me, man. That's my five.
All right. Well, there we go. Kicking things off. My number five is one which all of mine are indies. None of these I saw in the cinema, I should add. So I'll get that out of the way with right away. And my number five is a very different take on the zombie apocalypse. It's a film called Blood Quantum, written, directed, I think, and produced by Jeff Barnaby. Have you seen this one?
I have not.
So it's basically a First Nations horror film. So Native American reservation, and the group of Native Americans there who, when the zombie apocalypse hits, it turns out that they have an immunity to the strain of whatever virus is that's causing this. So it becomes very sociopolitical. That's interesting enough as a side, but what really makes this film pop for me is the gore and the effects in it. It's really impressive, some of what they managed to achieve in this particular film. And it has the device of showing the outbreak and then in a hard sort of cut halfway through the film, then skips ahead 6 months to see how this group of people are surviving and, you know, what happens when suddenly now they're the dominant culture, if I can put it that way, because any surviving non-Native Americans are desperate to get to their piece of safe haven, and they don't want to let everyone in because they know the virus can pop out in them much more readily. So,
okay. Well, you do love your zombie movies.
I do, as we know. It's not amazing. I don't want to give the impression it's incredible, but I was certainly entertained, and there's a couple of gore effects in it that make me sit up straight in my chair and really take notice. So it's signaling of a new talent, Jeff Barnaby, and I'd happily watch anything else he does after this. I believe this was his debut. No, I take that back. Okay. He's got lots and lots of short films. So, yeah.
Cool, man. I got to check that one out. All right, so my number four is a film that I just saw about 2 weeks ago, probably the one I've seen the most recent of the ones I'm going to talk about tonight. But this filmmaker is just amazing to me, man. This is his sophomore effort. His first film was not a horror, but I like it even more than this film.
Okay.
But I just saw it. It's a film called The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Ah, Jim Cummings, yeah.
And it's directed by Jim Cummings, who's a dude I actually got to meet a couple years ago at a local theater here in North Carolina when was doing a tour. He was doing a tour and doing like Q&As at Alamo Draft Houses for his first film, which is called Thunder Road, which was one of my top five films of 2018. Mm. But he's just an amazing filmmaker. He really has a knack for storytelling, and he does it from such a comedic perspective. So, you know, he's a cop in this small town. This film has been dubbed kind of like Fargo meets The Howling.
All right.
It takes place in a winter Utah town. And it's basically a werewolf story. And again, I'm not going to give away any plot twists or anything like that. But there is just this town werewolf that is attacking on the full moon. And he is a cop. He's a deputy in the town. Robert Forster plays his father in Robert Forster's last film role, which is really cool too.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. And, you know, those two dudes and the rest of the small police force there are trying to figure out why these brutal murders are occurring. You know, there's some comedic bits built into it because he thinks it's a person, a serial killer, and everybody else thinks it's a werewolf. And he's like, no, guys, werewolves don't exist. This is obviously a man, and I'm going to catch him, you know. And that's kind of the whole premise of the story. And then as we get towards the end of the film and the last act of the film, obviously as the audience, we kind of find out what the kind of plot twist is.
Right.
But we do get to see some creature effects in the film, some werewolf creature effects, which were really cool. And it has a really ominous kind of, you know, that Fargo-esque, like, winter dreary tone in it, but with a lot of dark comedy built into it. Because there's a lot of great character development, particularly with his character as this cop who's kind of battling with alcoholism and he's going through a divorce. And so there's a lot of deep character development that you wouldn't typically get from a horror movie. So, but yeah, I recommend everyone checking it out. I mean, it's brand new, so you're probably going to have to pay for it. But I think it's well worth it. It's a great movie, and hopefully people support it.
All right, great. I will definitely check that one out then based off your recommendation. Have heard, I think, the Epic Film guys also kind of get into a bit and praise it. So, yeah, all right. And then what's that one called again?
The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
There we go. All right. Gerald's fourth best horror film of the year. My fourth best horror film from 2020 is, you know, having just not had a go, but queried your choice of Come to Daddy. This is the least horror of my horror films and could, in certain perspectives, be seen as a thriller as well. It's currently available on Netflix here in Australia. I'm not sure, obviously, for you there in the States, Gerald, but it's called I See You. Directed by Adam Randall, and it stars, well, it says it stars Helen Hunt in a sort of return to our screens, but she's not the star of the film really at all. Have you seen this one?
I have, and I was looking it up because I thought this was a couple years old, man, but I guess you're right.
2019 is the sort of stamp on it, but it only came out here like 2 months ago.
I just brought this up with somebody on my show because we were talking about home invasion films.
Yep.
And I know you're probably going to talk about it, but the concept of frogging, you know, that's featured in this film, I didn't know anything about. Were you aware of that?
God,
were
people... No.
Me neither. I was like, is this a fucking thing? And then I was in this giant rabbit hole the night that I saw this movie, because this has happened. Like, people that have, like, giant homes and mansions and stuff, people do this. And that's just so weird to me.
I know. I have seen videos of, and I guess in some ways that's a kind of spoiler. I went in knowing nothing about this film. Let me be really clear. Nothing at all. I'm like, eh. I've seen some middling to good reviews. Letterboxd has it 3.3, which for a horror film is really good on that website. So I'll give this a shot one night. And I was just hooked right in. Like,
yeah, basically, me too, yeah.
Basically follows a 12-year-old boy who goes missing. A cop, one of the detectives or investigators in the town, is a guy who's married to Helen Hunt, and she's had an affair. So there's all this tension in the house. They've got a 18 or 19-year-old son, maybe 17, somewhere around that age, and he's really angry at mum. So it's all this family dynamic stuff mixed in with this disappearance of this kid, which is seemingly supernatural in nature. And then strange shit starts happening in the house as well, seemingly implying that there's ghosts and the like. Now, you've mentioned this term frogging. That does come into play in some ways, and the film takes a hard turn, and then it takes another couple of twists towards the end, which really sold me on it. I think it's an innovative film. It's quite different the way it's structured and put together. And I wasn't expecting anything from this movie, so low expectations helped me. I don't want to talk it up too much, but I was very pleasantly surprised. I was readily engaged and would recommend this to anyone who, you know, who's looking for a bit of a horror buzz, but yeah, kind of more of a thriller in some ways, and isn't likely, there's not a whole heap of gore, for example, in this movie, so you can probably watch it quite safely.
Yeah, this is one that I really like too. And for some, I don't know, you're right though, but for some reason in my mind, I felt like I was a couple years late to this, because I just saw this recently too, but I guess it did come out this year. But yeah, no, I love this movie, man. I mean, just the concept of it really, I didn't know anything about it.
Nah.
And the concept of it about halfway through, when you kind of find out what's going on in the house, really kind of like got to me, because then you realize that was something that actually happens. You know, it's based on like real stories or whatever. So I don't know. That was really cool too. But I really did like this movie, man. I didn't think about it for this list. I kind of wish I would have, because I want to say I gave it a 3.5 on Letterboxd. I did enjoy it.
There you go.
Good pick.
We're on the same page with this one. All right.
Yeah, man, for sure.
You're number three.
All right. My number three is a rare thing where horror is beautiful and is very emotional, and it's a very emotional watch. And it's also horrific at the same time, which to me is an amazing feat for from a filmmaking perspective to have those two things go together. You know, if you kind of think about like The Lord of Dracula, for example, how that's like a romantic yep. horror film. Well, this is just a beautiful emotional horror film, but it's a film called Relic.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah, I really love this movie, man. You know, it's really carried by three just powerhouse female performances, and they're three generations. So you have the grandmother who's suffering supposedly from amnesia or something of the like, and then you have the mother that's played by Emily Mortimer, and then you have her daughter that's played by Bella Heathcote, who's a newcomer. And the three of them together, and the three generations in this family and this womanhood and this bond, there's just a lot of weird shit going on again in the house that the grandmother lives at and the elderly woman lives at. And we start to kind of unfold what exactly is taking over her. Is it really dementia? Is it really amnesia? Or is there something supernatural going on? Is she actually of sound body and mind? And there's something else going on that we can't explain. And there's a lot of kind of like weird parallel universe kind of shit opened up in this movie. And I won't give too much away as we get through to the plot twist of the film. And I think the ending of this film, man, is just like, it really affected me because, again, this is a horror movie. And you had been watching a horror movie for 90 minutes. And you get down to that last like 5 or 10 minutes when the three women kind of come together to kind of just embrace the situation, so to speak, and kind of go down together. Do you know what I mean? And that was just a very beautiful thing. And I felt like the way that played out, particularly in that last scene, was just so aesthetically pleasing and amazing to look at. But also you're kind of horrified at the same time.
Right.
And for yep. me, that was just an amazing dynamic. So I really love this film. It hit me really hard. It's one of my favorite films of the year in any genre.
Wow. Okay. That's high praise indeed. I've seen this one. It's Australian. Don't know if you mentioned that.
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, very much Australian film set in sort of outback New South Wales, I think, or isolated town New South Wales. And I liked it, but unlike you, I felt the last act, it kind of fell apart. I think the atmosphere is wonderful in the first couple of acts. It's very slow. Mm-hmm. It's very deliberate in its pacing. It draws you in. It ratchets up the tension. But when it delivered its denouement, I wasn't as big a fan as you seem to be. So that's why it crept onto my list as number 10.
So, okay, I got you. All right.
But there you go. Absolutely okay. worth checking out. No, well, it's, you know, I've seen 2020 horror films somewhere in the order of 30, so it's not like it's a bad pick at all. I get it. I get where you're coming from.
Awesome, man.
All right. My number three is one I watched last night. I snuck it in at about midnight last night and went to bed mm-hmm. at 2 o'clock to watch this because I'd heard good things, and it's been a long time since I've seen a good horror anthology film. It's almost mm-hmm. brand new. It's called The Mortuary Collection from a director named Ryan Spindel. And unlike most horror film anthology films of the last, probably this millennium, he is entirely responsible for all the shorts, including the wraparound tale in this movie. And it basically follows Clancy Brown is this mortician, and he delivers a sermon and for a young boy who has died very sadly at the start of the movie. And it's this young woman comes to him and says, "I'd like to apply for the job. You've got a help wanted sign out the front." And so he starts telling this young woman about some of the more macabre tales of death that he's come across, because the big motif of this film is every life is a story, and he somehow is remembering and recording all these stories to ensure that people's lives go on. And so there's four tales, and their story is the wraparound tale. And it's just this really well put together, relatively low budget, but exceeding that in terms of how it's delivered on screen, fantasy horror film with some great gore moments at times, but also, you know, one story is really short, one's much longer. The wraparound's the best of them all. It's actually quite mm-hmm. fantastic when it all plays out, and really sold me the last story in this particular film. So very highly recommended as far as horror anthologies go. You probably have to go back to VHS 2 to be better than this horror anthology as far as I'm concerned. So check it out if you get the chance.
Yeah, I dug it, man. I saw this one just a few nights ago too, actually.
Oh, okay.
And it's in my extended list. It didn't make my top five, but I do really like it, and I do really agree with you that it's one of the better anthology films, especially. But I love, I can't remember if it was called The Babysitter Murders or...
Yeah, that's the last one, yeah.
Something to that effect, but that he did that as a short film, which I actually watched on YouTube after watching this movie. And that's a really good short film, too. So I don't know if you want to throw that on YouTube at one night when you got nothing to do for 20 minutes.
Will do. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if the short film has it, but it contains one of the best kills on screen I've seen in a long, long time. That sequence. It was amazing. I almost stood up and applauded at 2 a.m.
Yeah, it was really good. And I like the opening bit, too, with the girl in the bathroom, yep, with the medicine cabinet. There's a lot of cool, like, fantastical, like, creature feature kind of eerie stuff. But then there was a lot of, like, real kind of, you know, realistic stuff, too. And then some outlandish supernatural stuff, too. So it was a little bit of everything, a little bit of everything for everybody, which I thought was really cool, too.
Yeah. The only one I wasn't a huge fan of, and unfortunately was the longest tale, was the one about the...
don't say it.
Dying, say this. The dying wife and the husband who.
Oh yeah, okay, no, yeah, because I really like the one on the college campus.
No, that was great.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I loved it.
And some inventive, very inventive. I mean, that montage of the sex scene in that was incredible. Like, again, like, this is an indie director, first time film feature film director. He's delivering that kind of quality. He is a man to watch.
Right. Yeah. No, I dug it too, man. So good pick. I agree with you 100%.
Thanks, sir.
All right, so we're up to my number two, right? All right, yep. So my number two, I had to look at the release date because this was not on my list initially. And then I did like a Google search of like best horror, and this came up on quite a few lists. And I was like, wait a second. So I, just so you know, I did go back and like make sure I wasn't cheating. And it was released in the, it was released in the States in January of 2020, okay, even though it came out technically in 2019, but we didn't get it here until January. And I actually did see this in the theater with my daughter, which is an added thing for me because... whenever that happens, just nostalgia is kind of built into that for me.
For sure, I get it.
But it's Richard Stanley's Color Out of Space.
Yeah, it's in my bottom five of this list. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, dude, so much I could say about this film, you know. Admittedly, I'm a much more of a bigger fan of the second half of this movie.
Oh, yeah. You'd have to be, wouldn't you? The first half is slow.
Yeah, I guess you would have to be. You know, much like Mandy in a way, where Mandy's mm-hmm. split up into kind of two parts, and you have the first part of Color Out of Space is similar, where it's like kind of setting up the character, setting up the story, you know, some creepy shit's going on, but nothing really, you know, mind-blowing is happening yet. And then, just like in Mandy, and I hate to compare the two, but they seem very similar to me, maybe because of Nicolas Cage's just fucking outlandish performance that's amazing. But they just flip a switch, right? And the movie just changes and all this shit just starts happening and coming at you and just flying at your face, you know, no pun intended. I love this movie, man. There's a lot of cool, like, body horror effects built into it and practical in nature in a lot of ways. There was some CGI in this film, but a lot of practical stuff as well. And then, you know, Nicolas Cage is, whenever he can be just, like, over the top, but it fits, is like perfect. And when you get that, it's like just lightning in a bottle. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And I feel like he was perfect in this movie. You know, there's one scene when all this shit's happening around him and he's sitting in his car and he's telling the car to suck his dick. he's like cussing the car out, you know? I mean, it's just perfect Nick Cage. And it's just the campy shit that you look for in his movies, particularly in the like sci-fi or horror realm. And this is obviously comes from an H.P. Lovecraft work as well, which yep. I read as a young kid in college. So I love the works of Lovecraft, and this is always one of my favorite stories of his. I won't give away too much, but there's one scene that takes place in the attic in the last half of the film with the mother. And I'm sure you remember, but there's some great body horror stuff in that, man. That's
yep, I do.
One of those things where it's like so hard to watch, but it's like you don't want to look away because as a horror fan, you don't want to miss it. And it's just done so well by Richard Stanley and by the actors involved there. So, so that's my runner up. I think it's a great film. And I was so glad when I realized it came out in 2020 that I could talk about it tonight.
Yeah, definitely did. It's in my list. I don't think I liked it as much as you did, primarily because of the pacing and the like, but I do appreciate good film, especially good from the perspective of the director, Richard Stanley. This is his first feature film since he infamously basically went crazy doing The Island of Dr. Moreau and mm-hmm. disappeared off into the forest, creeping back onto set and hiding as an extra to see what was going on as I continued to film that abomination of a film, and then mm-hmm. basically went and lived in Europe and hid out from small town Germany, from what I vaguely remember, Austria. And here is his return to, you know, he's taken 25 years, I would say, to collect himself before he could mm-hmm. make another film. And this is the result. So hopefully he secured himself a bit more love and he can produce some more films going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I will admit, you know, it was a little long-winded, you know, Color Out of Space. I mean, it did have some bits in the first act and in the middle of the film that could have been snipped a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
But when it was over and credits were rolling, and you know, like I said, my daughter was with me, and we were both just like, you know, that was a great film. And I think it adds a little bit whenever, you know, like if you and Wayne go see a movie, and you both like love it, and you're just like, oh my God, that was, you know, it just adds to it a little bit.
Yep.
And we just enjoyed that movie going experience so much. And I watched it again on Shudder. Hey, you mentioned Shudder again. I watched it again on Shudder like a month ago when they put it on their service too, and it held up for me. So yeah, a great movie, man. So that's why I had to put it as my runner up.
Nice. All right. Well, speaking of runner ups and speaking of Shudder, mine is from that network as far as I believe. Well, that's one way to get it. It is called Host.
It's in my honorables.
I was blown away by this movie. Like, it's, look, at the end of the day, it's a sort of pseudo found footage. It's actually like the new subgenre of horror films, which is starting to come out now, like a Zoom footage horror film. And it basically follows five friends during an unnamed pandemic who can't get together and hang out like they normally would on their Thursday night or whatever it is. Six friends, my apologies. And they decide to hold a seance with a proper medium joining the call and guiding them through it. And of course, they don't take it seriously, or at least one or two of them don't take it seriously. And bad shit comes through and starts to happen to them. And it all progresses through the mechanism of you are watching a Zoom call. It is set up exactly like the Zoom call, the entire thing, right the way down to the end credits being kind of presented in a Zoom type fashion. And it's only, here's the big rub, 56 minutes long.
Now, that's what I like about it. Yeah.
Regular listeners of the show will know I spoke about this very warmly on a recent top 10, last 10. But I wanted to reemphasize this as by far one of the better horror films of 2020 for me. It's legitimately creepy in places, has a couple of great deaths, kills if you want to call it that. And yeah, I was expecting nothing, a 56-minute horror film. Please, more of this. If anything, what this film proves is you don't need 90 minutes or 85 minutes with 30 minutes of filler just to get it over the line to be a feature film. Deliver more like this, you know, obviously not going to put it to cinemas and charge full price, but you know, charge a modified price and people will come. People will see this shit if cinemas and theaters survive going forward.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. You know, what's even kind of ironic about Host is that, you know, there really probably could have still been like 15 or 20 minutes shaved off of it. And it could have been like a short film. I mean,
possibly.
I'm not saying I would have wanted that, but I'm saying that could have been. But it definitely didn't need to be more than an hour is what I'm saying.
No, but it would have been tiresome if it went on for 20 more minutes or 30 more minutes. But at this pace, at this length, you're like, I got enough of each character, not necessarily to care about them, but at least to understand them. And so when they start getting offed, it works.
I agree, man. And, you know, it was cool, too, because it was like a filmmaker saying, okay, what are people doing right now with COVID, with the pandemic? You know, and it was like, this movie is literally going to be a product of its time. You know, like people are going to be able to look back at this movie and be like, oh, okay, that was the horror movie that was super popular during COVID.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like it'll kind of always have that kind of stamp on it, which I think is really cool because you'll be able to always put it in a time and a place. And I think it's really good too. You know, I think it does have that kind of witchy, ghostly kind of seance stuff going on, which is awesome. And being that it's a Zoom call and that it's so, you know, it was very similar. I love Searching too a few years ago.
Yep.
And that wasn't so much a horror, but I mean, it was kind of the same concept where film. It was using. Yeah. And I know you're a fan of it as well, but you know, it was the same concept. You know, social media was such a huge thing and it was blowing up and, you know, teenagers were all over it. And it was like, okay, well, you know, here's this dad using that to, you know, solve this mystery. And then in Host, it's the same thing, but it's told from what everybody's using right now, which is Zoom. So I love this movie, too. I want to say, I'll tell you here in a minute, but I want to say it's like on my 7 or 8 on my list. But yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah.
And again, interested to see what Rob Savage, the director, who organized all this post the start of the pandemic and just kind of got on the phone to his friends and said, how about we do this? And apparently it all came from he decided to shoot this sort of live YouTube thing going up into his attic and something lurching out at him. Like, you know, he set it up as like a, you know, hey, guys, come up with me. I got to find this, you know, rat or whatever it is in my ceiling. And he set up this big scare. And then they went, maybe we can turn this into an actual film. So, yeah.
Yeah, great pick, man. All right, so I guess we're doing our number ones, right?
This is it. Yep. What is the best horror film of 2020 so far? Gerald.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, man. You know, it's obviously a personal list and it's obviously my opinion. But this is the one movie on my list, including my honorables, that's just stuck with me. Like, I think I've thought about this movie every couple days since I've seen it. You know, every 2 or 3 days, I just like think about this movie. I've watched it again, so I've seen it twice. You know, I watched it originally when it was released on Shudder. It's an original film that they released a few months ago. I don't have the exact date, but I want to say it was like over the summer. And then I revisited it this month for my horror viewings. But it's a movie called The Beach House.
Oh. On
Shudder. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen it.
All right. So it's actually a similar arc, although it's not, you know, alien in nature, but it's a similar arc to like Color Out of Space, because they're in a beach house, obviously, the title would tell you. And it's this young couple who they go there because it's his dad's beach house, and it's the off season. So the two of them are like going on a romantic getaway, and they just kind of go to his dad's beach house because they know that nobody's going to be there because it's like the winter, you know? So they go, and they end up meeting this other couple that's there for the off season, and the four of them just kind of spend time together over this course of a few days. And to make a long story short, all this kind of weird shit starts happening around them, like in nature, and it's like an environmental horror, which we don't get a lot of.
Okay, yep.
And it comes to fruition that it has to do with the coastline and with the ocean, because they're right there on the beach. But anyway, it's got this like The Fog vibe, kind of the Mist kind of vibe. Oop. Where
had my attention. Now you have my interest.
Yeah. It's like this environmental kind of phenomenon is like affecting the people of this small town that are there, because it's a very secluded population because they're there during the winter on the coast. And it follows these two main, you know, young characters that went there as visitors. And there's a lot of really cool body horror stuff in this as well that's hard to look at, but it's just so impressive. Jeffrey A. Brown's the director. It's his first feature film. He does some amazing stuff. And the ending of this film, the last, like, minute of this film, if even that, the main characters, the main girl in the film is in this one scene at the very, very end. It's just so haunting. Like, it's like, and it's so beautiful, like from a cinematography standpoint, like the way it's shot and everything. And I just was like mesmerized by that shot that this director did and the actress's performance, that I like watched that scene over because I rewound it. I just watched that last like 30 seconds. I'm like, wow, this is really fucking cool.
Right.
So if you ever do watch this, just remember that last minute and just let me know what you thought of that. But yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but it does have a Mist, Fog kind of vibe. There's, you know, like a little bit of like infection kind of storyline going on with what's going on around them in the environment. But it does leave a lot to the imagination too, which I like. It doesn't give everything away to the viewer.
All right.
Which I enjoy as well.
So the beach house.
But it is a slow burn though, Paul. And I know you. So I just want to tell you, it's a slow burn. It's heavy on performances. It's heavy on aesthetic, like, you know, the camera shots, and there's a lot of close-ups of things going on in the ocean and that kind of thing. But when the plot does play out, it's really, really good for a horror fan, I would imagine.
All right. Well, it might not be as much my cup of tea, because I think if we learned anything today, it's that Gerald likes the patient, the slow build, you know, knock them over hard in the last
I think act you'll like it.
Horror film. And
I think you'll like it. I think you'll like it, though.
Whereas I'm all for the, you know, quick thrills and give me gore, and I don't want to have to be waiting around too long, which is exactly what my number one delivers in spades.
All right, cool.
So to segue in that way, my number one is from a guy who's become a bit of a name in the horror circles. His name's Joe Begos, and this is a grindhouse horror film called VFW. Have you seen it, Joe?
Haven't seen it.
Okay.
I have not seen it. No. So I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
I'll be careful on the spoilers, but it basically follows five veterans at a VFW, and it's in this kind of slight dystopian near future where this drug has run rampant, and there happens to be a sort of drug house across the way, and the drug lord who rules this sort of, I call it drug house, call it a drug tenement, if you will. Someone steals from him and comes into the VFW, and they rally around this character to protect them from the drug lord, who sends all his druggies who are high on this drug straight at the VFW saying, kill everyone in there and bring me back my shit. And it just becomes like a hopped up on steroids version of Assault on Precinct 13, with some incredible kills, great gore, and this really pink pastel red aesthetic, which blends in sort of perfectly with what it's trying to do. And it stars as the main dude, Stephen Lang.
Oh, okay.
Stephen Lang as the guy who kicks ass is not hard to buy at all. He's awesome in this movie. But then supporting him are a whole bunch of these actors from sort of the 80s or the 90s that you'll recognize as the mates of all these veterans. And like Fred Williamson, so, you know, the dude from Dusk Till Dawn, and heaps and heaps of older films than that, grindhouse and action films. George Wentnor from Cheers.
Oh, nice. Cool.
William Sadler from many other things, including Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, Martin Cove, so the guy who was Cobra Kai leader in Karate Kid. So it's that kind of actor here now. Obviously, all gotten older. They're all in advancing years and putting their skills as veterans to the test against this horde of fucked up druggies trying to kill them.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds great, man.
You got to check it out.
Do you know if this is this streaming or do you know? You don't know?
It's available on iTunes here in Australia and Amazon US, apparently. So,
all right, let's do it then. Yep. Let's do it because I'm all over Amazon. So I just made a note of that one. That's one that I haven't seen. I heard of it, but I didn't know all those details you just told me. George Wendt? Come on, man.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that the cast have assembled here, which is fun. And look, you know, it's not brilliant. It's the best of the year for me, but I was thoroughly entertained. It's not highbrow concept. It's pretty in your face. It's like I said, it's meant to be a grindhouse film, so it's not subtle at all. There's some huge gore in it. It's exactly the polar opposite of The Beach House, I think. So just be aware.
Well, we'll give everybody a little bit of everything, then that's fine.
That's it. All right. So do you want to quickly run down your 5 through 1, and then let's talk through 6 through 10?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So my 5 was Come to Daddy. My 4 was The Wolf of Snow Hollow. My number 3 was Relic. My number 2 was Color Out of Space. And my number 1 was The Beach House.
Alrighty. My 5 was Blood Quantum. 4, I See You. 3, The Mortuary Collection. 2, Host. And my number 1 favorite horror film of 2020 thus far, VFW. What's your 6 through 10 then, Gerald? What's the honorables to get people through the year?
Yeah, man. So another Shudder original that I just saw recently, but I think it's an important film too because we don't get enough gay horror films.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's not enough gay representation in horror. But they just released a movie called Spiral, which has been dubbed as the gay Get Out. I don't think it is quite as good as Get Out. It doesn't live up to that.
It's a high bar. That's a high bar.
I was gonna say, it was almost unfair to give it that kind of subtitle, but. But it is a great film, and like I said, I feel like it's important, and it hopefully will start a wave of more gay representation in horror.
Absolutely.
My number 7 is The Invisible Man, of course, and really just because of Elizabeth Moss. I mean, she's just a queen on earth. I mean, I love her. She's such an amazing actress.
She is.
And even in horror, she carries it. I mean, you know, it's not... And there's so much negative space in Invisible Man. It's not like there's a lot of in-your-face gore and effects and stuff like that. It's just performance. And it's her reacting to a blank room. And she just does such an amazing job at being able to bring you into the fear factor there. My number 8 would have been Host, which you already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
My number 9 is an independent film from Carrie Murnion. It's called Becky.
Yes,
which starred I watched that one recently. Kevin, yeah, starred Kevin James as a white supremacist, and it's kind of a home invasion film. And then I did this for you, Paul.
Okay.
All right, because listen now. I like this film, and I know you hated it because I feel like I heard you talk about it on one of your top 10 last tens. It's been a while, but I remember you mentioning that you did not like it, and I was like, I fucking like that film, but it's Underwater is my number 10.
Bleh.
All right? With Kristen Stewart. I do love her, though, so I think I'm a little biased, but I feel like she's a kick-ass heroine in that film, and I feel like the films that it borrowed from are obviously going to be Alien and Abyss, right? And
yep.
It takes those two films and, in some respects, copies a lot of the things that we see in those two films, but I feel like it also works to that film's benefit because it knows that's what it's doing. It's not trying to hide that. And it does bring something new to it, particularly in the last act when we see these monsters and the creatures that are featured in this film. I'm a little biased because of K-Stew, but I'm also a little bit of bias because space and the ocean scare the shit out of me.
All right.
So just that whole kind of claustrophobic environment got to me. So I really enjoyed Underwater, even though I know that you don't.
Nah, not really. Not really. I'd just rather go back and watch Aliens or The Abyss again, if I'm honest. So.
I know.
All right, well, for me then, my number 6 is a film which created a bit of buzz when it was meant to come out and got pushed back because of what it sort of portrays. It's called The Hunt. It's a rare Blumhouse good film. Again, straddling that line between is it really a horror or is it not, which is why I sort of pushed it off my top 5 into the 6th spot. 7 is an Aussie horror film called Blood Vessel, which is basically set in World War II, and a bunch of disparate characters are floating on a life raft, have their ship having been sunk by the Germans, and they get picked up by a strange German ship, which is completely deserted. Or is it? That one. 8 would be The Rental, Dave Franco's directorial debut.
Yeah, can I just say that I'm gonna be Paul Prezzullo on this one. That one just didn't get going for me.
Yep.
Like I long, was waiting for it to get going.
I can't believe this, Gerald. This is we're flipping roles here. I appreciated the build up, but you didn't. Okay,
that's what I was saying. I mean, I don't know. I also think that that film suffered because I didn't connect to any of the characters. Like I didn't like any of them.
Yep. Okay.
And I think maybe that hurt it for me personally. I mean, it wasn't a bad film, especially considering it was Dave Franco's first directorial effort.
Yep.
I thought it was directed really well. I just wish that either shit had happened sooner or I had been connected to some of the characters.
It's kind of weird.
Maybe that's my fault.
Given the people attached to it, I kept thinking it's not going to go the way it's going to go, but it did. So I gave it kudos for that. So, all right, 9. And then 9 and 10 are the ones that were on your list, as mentioned. Color Out of Space and Relic is my 10.
Okay, cool, man.
All right, that's it for today. That's, well, not quite 20 horror films to recommend, but somewhere in the order of 16 or the like. So hopefully you can find something there to sate your horror appetites as we edge into Halloween and then beyond. Gerald, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, the listeners know by now where you are, but give us the quick spiel and we'll wrap it up.
Of course, man. Well, if they haven't checked me out yet, this week would be a great week to do that because you're on, brother. Ah. We're doing our... top 5 horror game-changing films at the end of the month here in October. And, you know, all October long, I do Halloween spooky-themed episodes, and I do that every year. So it's my favorite month of the podcast. But just in general, we do a top 5 show. We count down movies, TV, music, and pop culture, a different topic and a different guest host every week. And we just rotate in guest hosts, and we have a good time talking about our favorites in, you know, whatever the category may be. And like I said, you're on this week doing our game-changing horror films, which was a blast.
It was great fun.
And we had a ton of crossover on that episode.
Remember
that?
Most crossovers ever, I reckon.
We had 4 out of 5 crossovers. Yeah. But it was a great conversation nonetheless, and I think it's irrefutable that those are obviously game-changers, and that's why we crossed over.
When we agree, it is absolute lock it in. It's gospel.
It's a good day, right? It's a good day. As far as following us, man, just we're on social media, 2Ps on a Pod, which is TWO spelled out. And then we're also on Facebook and Instagram at 2Ps on a Podcast. So I hope people look us up and check us out. Thanks for having me.
Do check out Gerald. He does a great show. Obviously, it's very similar to the Countdown, just a bit tighter in top fives and regular different guest hosts. So Gerald does all the work. Hats off to him. It's a would be a tough gig, and it's a pleasure to have you on today and to feature on your show when I get the golden opportunity to do so. All right.
Sure, man.
That's it for us today. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Gerald.
And this has been The Soundboard.
I kick ass for the Lord!
Which I had to put in post because it hasn't been here with me all day. We'll catch you next time.